Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and my very special returning guest. I'm very excited about having Michael Goddard back with us as we continue our conversations, whether it's past lives or existence or whatever the case might be. It's always fun to talk with this gentleman. He's got a lot of wonderful insights from his own personal experiences, basically in living his life. And he's going to share those with us here on the program. Michael, welcome back.
Richard, it's great to be back. Always a delight to talk with you.
You know, there was something that my wife shared with me that I found rather fascinating. Sometimes I wonder if she thinks that I should get more excited about some of the things she brings to my attention. And I just like, yeah, well, that's very cool. When she shared with me that apparently, I don't know if it's anthropologists, I'm not sure what the area of science is that determines the age of things, but they are determining that many of the pyramids around the world are older. And I mean really old. They're much older, maybe thousands of years older than the anthropological society, as I guess you might say, were telling us. You know, for example, I guess in Egypt, they were saying that, I don't know, maybe it was 4,000 or 5,000 years old. And I'm just throwing that number out. I don't know. But now they're saying it could be 10 or 20,000. In other words, a whole other civilization occupied this planet long before, if you want to use the biblical reference of 6,000 years ago, long before that, and that they aren't here anymore because they annihilated themselves. And there are those who say, hey, we're on the brink. I find that interesting because what that starts to raise is the question and the conversation you and I are going to have, basically talking about solving the mysteries of existence. And we're going to dive into several different areas, but what are your thoughts in that regard? I mean, if you've ever thought about it from that standpoint, that, you know, mankind in general has been here way longer than the Christian Bible tells us or any other philosophy tells us we've been here.
Oh, absolutely. In my book, In Search of Lost Lives, I recovered many, many lives before the Christian era. And going back to lives in Atlantis, and when I was a Lemurian, Lemurian background genetically, living in the country that's now Indonesia, I go back very, very far, several hundred thousand years. The fact is that so much of these civilizations have disappeared over time. You know, if they use natural materials, those are not going to hold up as well as, you know, steel and plastic. But I got very distinct, precise details of lives a couple hundred thousand years ago. So we've been here way, way longer.
And that's just on this planet, because there are those that I've talked with on this program who've said, in terms of past lives, and I think you've alluded to this as well, this isn't the only planet we have occupied in previous lifetimes.
Right. This is actually my third planet, Richard. And I detail notable lives on my planets Visine and Jor-Lu, in before I ever came to Earth. And life, in a sense, was much easier there. I always say that Earth is a school of hard knocks. And all those lives on those previous planets helped prepare me for life on this planet, which is no walk in the park.
Well, I tell you what, walking in the park would be preferable to dealing with a lot of
stuff we have to deal with.
Exactly.
It's another.
It seems like every time we turn around, whether it's within our realm of existence, and what I mean by that is, of course, what you and I as individuals deal with from day to day. I mean, you just went through a move. I'm cutting up an oak tree. Those are our individual lives and the things that we're doing. Or we are somehow, or we allow ourselves, this is the way I put it, we allow ourselves to be affected, impacted in whatever way, by the events of the city, state, nation, and globe, the world, when in fact, there's nothing we can do about those situations. They are out of our control because we're not, they're not in our immediate realm of existence. And yet we still allow those things to foster in our brains and our minds and so on and so forth, and our hearts and souls for that matter. And the only relief sometimes is quite honestly leaving this realm. You know, it seems as though, and there are people who choose that too. So it's
right. Well, what you mentioned, they're all just part of the illusion. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you get completely lost in politics or gaming, or any of the things that rob your attention, it keeps us locked into this prison. I think of life here as living in a prison, because we have far more glorious, loving existences possible. But we have to keep coming back simply because of the law of karma. For some reason, there's always been a huge resistance in the West to that, where it's just an accepted fact of life in many cultures in the East. Yeah. So we're really bound by our karmic destinies each time we come back. But there are spiritual paths where you can eviscerate, vaporize, whatever term you want to use, get rid of your karmas, eliminate them, to go beyond the physical and mental planes.
Yeah. Well, you know that the proverbial questions that we are asking on a regular basis throughout our lifetimes, there's like the biggies, you know. Who am I? Why am I here? And where am I going? And those seem to be the big ones. And right. It kind of takes us maybe to the core fundamental question, which I find interesting, even just to raise this particular question in this regard. We'll start here maybe with the whole aspect of existence. And that has to do with, first of all, I guess you'd have to say, the acceptance of a creator or a council of creators, who knows, and why they created this universe and us in it. And I kind of put it this way. All right, all of this was created. What's the end game?
Right. Well, we can't really appreciate the purpose of creation or how it happened until we merge back in what you can call the supreme being, the all-knowing omniscience, what I call love source. But for whatever reason, that love source wanted to experience a creation. So it issued forth its creative power. Mm-hmm. And basically, our identity, you asked, who are we? The true us is that we are souls lost in the creation. And to come into the creation at some point when we entered the first mental realm, which is in the West called the causal plane, mm-hmm. Trikuti, it's been named by various masters, we had to take association with the mind. Because we were in the mental plane. So we got a causal body that became associated with our soul. And then when we went down further, and something with a lower vibration, less beauty, that was the astral plane. So we took on an astral body. And of course, to come into the physical plane, we take on a physical body. So when we expire, our mind and soul leaves, and you know our physical bodies are burnt or buried, however it's carried out. So we are here going through experience after experience, and every action creates a reaction. And initially we had free will, but it's sort of like the beginning of a chess game. You know, your first move, you can do just about anything, but 30 moves into the game, your options are limited. Well, that's sort of a very basic, crude example of our traipsing through creation.
Yeah, and it does seem like that's kind of what we're doing. And yet, I get a great deal of input from many of my guests having to do with this aspect of connecting with the natural world, that that is where many of our answers can and do come from in terms of how to circumnavigate this world in which we live. In other words, it's not that difficult. Just freaking open your eyes, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. Well, you know, immersing yourself in nature, so to speak, is sort of like the busyness of the mind can fall away, mm-hmm. and we're more in tune with our intuition and our higher consciousness, but we're still, you know, in the physical world. I mean, people, that's like kind of, you could call it a walking meditation. I mean, that's also what meditation is for, to still the mind and be in touch with your higher self. But the truth is, we're basically 99% mind at this point, and our souls are totally enshrouded by our desires.
Yeah.
It's really, desire is really the juice of creation. It's what keeps us coming back. Our mind is attracted to the senses, which is attracted to outer things.
Yeah.
So we're really caught in what I call a prison house. And if you're seeking the truth, you're one of the lucky people because you're beginning to wake up.
Well, I will tell you, I would like to think that that's my state of waking up, because it was kind of put this way in one of these programs I went through, where these situations, these scenarios were presented to the people involved, the participants, by the facilitator, sometimes one-on-one and sometimes in group settings and so forth. And a common phrase was often used, and that is, but I'm so confused. And the facilitator would respond with, well, the state of confusion is a wonderful place to live, but you're not really going to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that there aren't moments, and they seem to be farther and fewer and farther between in my life, of those states of confusion, or being in that state of confusion, if you will. But at the same time, as I, the broader part of it is, it's like, and I'll simplify it, as I've mentioned, because I've been cutting this oak tree up for a long time, because it's a big tree.
I remember it from past interviews.
Yeah, it fell last March to mm-hmm. 2023, after mm-hmm. the storms. And so I've been cutting it up. And I have to tell you that I spend time while I'm doing this thanking the tree for its contribution. I wish that it was still standing upright, vertical, you know, because it was a beautiful tree and provided shade and, of course, a living space for many different creatures. And this is a sense I get that it guides me in the cutting, in what I like to refer to, and this is sort of a play on words from Elon Musk. It is a controlled, intentional disassembly, as opposed to one of his SpaceX that went up and they blew it up. And, well, that was an uncontrolled, unintentional disassembly or something along those lines. But it's telling me, here, don't, you know, I know you want to cut like the trunk. You want to cut this. And these are big, going to be big circles. Why don't you work on that smaller branch today and tomorrow or the next? I'll tell you when, kind of thing. And then I'll come back to the trunk and then a couple of days later and I'll start slicing away, you know, cutting these circles. And it's just effortless. And I'm very careful that I'm uphill from the wheels as they roll downhill. And it's akin to a hunter who shows that level of reverence towards the kill that he is going to feed himself and his family with. And this one where this man and his son were hunting, and this is a young kid, and the young kid got the kill, and then the father took him over there to the kill and said, and here's what you do. And he laid, they both laid their hands on the animal. And the father, hoping that the son remembers this, paid honor and homage to that animal for its gift and so forth. And then they went through the dressing process and so forth. That to me transcends just nature, because it's like, okay, you just showed that wonderful kindness and compassion to that animal that you took its life, obviously, for the reasons of feeding your family. Now, can we transmit that same kindness to fellow human beings that have even, and I don't want to diminish the value of the animal, but have greater value to a human being? And it's like, but people seem to have lost that in many instances, not all, and that it's not the whole population. And maybe it's a minority, because we're seeing the videos and so forth on TV and on social media of the unkindness. And maybe it's been told to me that's a minority. That's not the majority. And it just seems to me that it's like, what's the point of your even being here if this is the way that you are going to treat your fellow man and woman and child?
Right. Well, an essential part of spiritual evolution is to be the best human being you can. And a prime aspect of that is being kind. And I have a meditation on that called Unsparing Kindness in my new book, coming out in June, which you've had a look at, mm-hmm. The Contentment Dividend.
Yes.
No, kindness is absolutely essential, actually. So I have noticed a real change in the level of kindness, but it's just that life has become so fraught, you know.
And I'm wondering again, if it is that we're so inundated by all the images that we think that I'll use the word, we think it's a pandemic. You know, we think it's chronic. We think it's malignant, if you will, in our society. When the reality is there are also just as many videos. And I love the ones where at the end of the video, they're explaining, well, this was a social experiment. And what they do is they go out there to find people, and they're asking them for money, or they're asking them for food, or whatever it is, to find the kindness. And when they do, though you don't do the kindness for this reason, they give them a reward. Sometimes it's $5, $10, $15, $20,000. Sometimes, you know, and sometimes it's a housewife, it's a businessman, it's a homeless person who doesn't have really much of anything. And so they are out there scouring the earth, these individuals, these social mediaists, if you will, looking for the kindness. And it is there. It does exist. It's not, you know, it's not something that is in the minority. And I think that's the other beautiful thing about social media, is you can find the other side. And I think that's one of the things that we can talk about as we continue talking with Michael Goddard. And we encourage you to go to goddard.com and find out more about the work he's doing. He's got an upcoming book, which we're very excited about. We're looking forward to seeing how that opens up the eyes, I hope, of a lot of folks. We're talking today about the mysteries of existence solved. Again, my guest, Michael Goddard. Goddard.com is the website, which we will be linked to. One of the aspects we talk about regularly on this program has to do with our spirituality, which is different than religious. And that's a point that's made in a lot of studies. The X number of people or a certain percentage of the population of America say they are religious. I mean, spiritual, not necessarily religious.
Yeah, that's the fastest growing group in the surveys.
And they're not necessarily churchgoers. All right. That's one of the other points that is made, that they don't necessarily attend services. And I will say too, I'll add to that, atheists. I have had an atheist or two on this program, And as they talk, I begin to realize, my gosh, they're just as spiritual. They have values. They have morals. They have ethics. They have a compassion in their heart. What difference does it make whether they choose or not choose to believe in a supreme being? And at the same time, I saw one of those videos, Michael, where they were talking about theistic and monotheistic philosophies down through history. And yeah, the monotheistics, they've been, you know, in the last 2,000, 3,000 years, but there have been multiple God philosophies that go back even further. And I have to wonder sometimes if maybe there are multiple deities that maybe carry out, I don't know, different tasks.
They can, but that, you know, finding out about them really doesn't solve the problem of our existence.
No, not really.
Which is, you know, we're here. We don't know what's going to happen from day to day.
Right.
And there's pain and suffering. You know, I have a lot of respect for atheists. It's because they really have kind of a show me attitude.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem with religions is that they're often based on highly evolved people. You can call them saints, masters, prophets that lived centuries ago. So you don't have the experience of what a human being can be. Now, I have spent a fair amount of time with somebody who I feel has reached God consciousness, who's a God-realized human being.
Mm-hmm.
And you can totally appreciate that this person is not a normal human being. It's an entirely different kind of human being. And in my spiritual memoir, In Search of Lost Lives, I write about my meeting two lives ago with Swamiji in India, and how, what an extraordinary, unique experience that was, and how it changed my whole trajectory through existence, because that really supercharged my seeking and my seeking for God or truth, whatever you want to call it. So a lot of us, we're working with very limited aspects of consciousness, but the whole point is really what your intentions are for this life. If you want to solve the mysteries of existence, you can. I feel very comfortable being asked the questions, who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? Is there life after death? Is there a devil? From an early age, I wanted to solve those questions, those immortal questions of humankind. So I devoted my life to searching for the answers and came onto the spiritual path.
But as I was, the reason I even brought up this aspect of deities, it's because the belief in them does influence the way in which we live, our, in essence, our existence, and why we choose to do what we do, and the maybe even the path that we take or that we don't take can often be determined by much of what we believe. One of my favorite quotes in regards to belief, though, was by Carl Sagan, and I'll paraphrase. Basically, there's no point in arguing with someone based upon belief, because the belief is based upon stuff that can't really be proven. They choose to believe it. They invest or vest themselves in it, whatever it is, even to the exclusion of facts that may come up that verify that what they believe may or may not be true. It astounds me that, first of all, there are those who say that we found, for example, Noah's Ark. And because they found Noah's Ark, that justifies and validates Christianity. If you're going to validate anything, you're going to validate Judaism, because it's in the Old Testament. You know, I mean, that's just my rudimentary philosophical take on it. But that's one of the things that people will do, is that they will base their entire lives and live them out that way based upon a belief in something. And I think I've shared this with you before. I love what Greg Braden said, that one day we will no longer believe. We'll know. We will know that we know whatever it is, you know.
Well, I don't know if it's... Right, and that's the whole point of spiritual seeking is to enter the field of knowing, which is really an experiential field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can, going back to the idea of true saints or realized masters, you can believe that human beings can create miracles, have really expanded consciousness and power. But unless you really meet that person, you don't experience it.
So right.
People can believe in others who've been dead for centuries. Now, you know, there very well may be all kinds of deities. There are, in fact, angels and different kinds of gods all in the higher regions. But the thing is, they're at a disadvantage. And this is a point I'd like to make, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
To really go back to the one, the supreme being, it's really the human being, which is the vehicle. Gods and angels, you know, minor gods and angels who may live in the astral or causal realm, they're trapped because they don't have the vehicle for realizing God. That's why human beings are called the top of creation. We have... At the I Center, you can meditate and withdraw your consciousness and ascend to the third eye, which I'm sure many listeners have heard of. And from there, you begin the inner journey. I mean, a lot of scientists or atheists don't believe in any realms beyond the physical because simply they have not experienced it. You can't take physical equipment onto a plane of consciousness which is beyond the physical. It's that simple. So the only way to know that it exists is to experience it. And to experience it, you really need a guide who's been there back, you know, countless infinite number of times. So that was a lot to unload in a short time. So feel free to unpack that as you will.
Well, one of the things I might say about that is that because we've talked about this particular philosophy, it says in the Bible, it is appointed to man once to die, then the judgment. Let's stick with the first part of that. It is appointed to man once to die. All right. So then I go back into one of the Gospels where Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Now, wait a minute. Hold on a second. It said over here, once. You only die once. Lazarus died twice. He had to have, because Jesus raised him from, quote unquote, the dead. So then, of course, the whole issue of what is death? You know, how do we know? And to me, that's also a fundamental question that needs to be answered in order to understand when life begins. If you wanted to go down that road and get into that conversation, you have to define when we die in order to know when we live. When we actually become a living being. But it's one of those aspects of existence, as we're talking about here in terms of uncovering and solving the mysteries of existence, that a lot of people, I mean, I have close friends and relations who are absolutely fearful of death because they're afraid that there is nothing after this existence. Now, I cannot, because I haven't had a near-death experience, I cannot express a knowing that there is something after this life. All I can base it on is what my intuition tells me, that if this life ends in darkness, first of all, I'll never know. Okay.
You'll know when you die. Actually.
Well, I'll know when I leave the body, but once I've left, it's over. It's darkness. That's one of the beliefs, that when the body dies, you're done. There is nothing after this.
Well, that's why, I mean, Christ, I mean, first of all, Jesus Christ did not write the Bible, you know, his...
No, 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 that's true.
Apostle. But there are very valuable quotes still within it, like,
sure.
I die daily,
mm-hmm.
which is really shorthand for the meditation.
Yeah.
There's meditation where you do die daily, which is withdrawing your soul and mind current from the body.
Mm-hmm.
So you are leaving your physical body and you're going beyond. Now, that's not belief, it's experience.
Right.
And any person can do it. It just really takes leading a clean moral life and getting initiated by one who has been granted the powers of anointment, of initiating people. Mm-hmm. So well, if you're really fearful of death, that is a great boon and booster to find out what death is all about.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my spiritual search really got supercharged when I let go of my parents' religion, right after I turned 11, and I really was encountering the fact that I was going to die. I would lock myself in the bedroom and stare at myself and try to imagine what it'd be like after I died. And I would break out into a cold sweat and I'd be experience fear and trembling. Well, that really supercharged my search to finding the answer to life and death. And when I was 21, I came across teachings which totally satisfied me and which I'm practicing.
Well, and obviously meditation is a huge, huge part of all this, because in addition to slowing down the body at many, many levels, it also allows us to, shall we say, center ourselves, get our focus back. When you're out there dealing with the world, no matter how expansive it might be, it's very easy to get drawn into those dramas that are going on elsewhere. And
you get caught up in the play. But a very basic analogy that masters use is if you don't know how to swim and you're thrown into a raging river, you're going to drown.
Right.
But if you practice swimming every day in that river bit by bit, when the time comes and you have to go in that river, you can stay, you can swim and live. So that's what certain kinds of meditation are. It's dying while living. It's really preparing yourself to die, because you are collecting your attention at the eye center and beginning to have the force to withdraw at will. And that's what's so exciting about the whole mystical path.
And it's like we don't in this country, and I'm going to say that from a cultural standpoint, in North America, in the United States of America particularly, I don't know about Canada, I don't know about Central America, we don't have something like that as part of the quote unquote American culture, that actually comes from the cultures, the individual cultures, if you will, that make up America. And that's the American culture, that it is. I don't even want to use the word conglomeration, because it sounds like it all stirs it up and mixes it, because that's not what happens, because everybody finds the bits and pieces that work for them in their lives. And that's basically what you have done. And I know it hasn't been exclusively in the United States, but that's something that you and others are really helping the rest of us to understand, that this is part of all of our lives. Doesn't matter where you come from. And the reason you know that you can say this with certainty is because it's part of all of these other cultures that have come here to make up what we call the America.
Well, right. I mean, you know, we have a wonderful variety of cultures, and people from all different lands. But the fact is, it's still we're still dealing with the material world.
Sure.
We are still caught up in the material world and all the sights and pleasures and everything. It really comes down to what you want to do with your life and what you want to have happen after you leave this body. And in my book, A New Now, I have one of the 11 wisdoms. I cover 33 wisdoms, but one of the key wisdoms is the wisdom of grooming. And I said before the reader, there are really four different options of what you can do with your life. And that can really orient you to making a difference in your relationship to your life and what you're going to do with how many breaths you have left.
Yeah. To me also, staying in touch with one's intuition or one's inner life, if you will, even whether you want to call it as part of your meditation, or otherwise, because that's where I get the meaning of my life, and not necessarily specifically under a particular category, but that my life has meaning. Because if I didn't believe that, then these interviews are a waste of my time. I should be out there raping, pillaging, and plundering, because it doesn't matter. I'll just go with my base natural instincts and just do whatever I want. And there are a lot of people out there that are doing that too. But I believe that my life has meaning, that there's a reason why I'm here and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I know you feel the same way about your life.
Oh, absolutely. And your intuition is really the key to proceeding on your search.
I mean, so let's talk about that in terms of the relationship between the soul. We'll call it that because that's kind of where we go, I guess, within our souls to touch base with that divinity or that still small voice, what have you, and the mind, which tends to not. I mean,
well,
you know,
right. Well, in the book, New Now, I write a lot about your higher mind and your lower mind. There's a great deal about intuition and developing the intuition. So the higher mind can become an ally of the soul. The lower mind is what takes you away from your better self. So the higher mind is the mind that wants to be kind, that wants to be you to be of service, the part of you that wants to experience spirit and grow your intuition. The lower mind is the mind that runs after the passions, you know, whether it's greed and accumulating, hurting other people just for the sake of it being mean. So if you're a seeker, you want to be also developing your higher mind. And as your intuition grows, your higher mind strengthens. As I said earlier at the beginning, right now we're virtually just mind. But if you are focusing on developing your higher mind and developing the wisdoms, which I write about in A New Now, that is really opening the way for your soul to blossom. A lot of the ways I was able to intuit so much, you know, after, well, decades of meditation and recover 88 past lives is, well, your soul is all-knowing because once you liberate your soul from your mind, everything you've experienced is absolutely known to you. But all those decades of meditation and development of my intuition, the all-knowingness of my soul was filtering through to my higher mind. And that's why I was able to get so many precise, exact details of my past lives, but also what all the different wisdoms are.
One of the interesting aspects of this is especially in meditation, and I think we've talked about this before in terms of how one meditates. There are as many ways of meditating as there are people on the planet. And you have a lot of these meditations in the works that you have brought forth. And I think my favorite analogy was a process I went through where finally I just said, I was told this Well, why not make friends with the mind and bring it along? But it has one rule. One rule: you have to be quiet. Let me be in this quiet place, listening to that still small voice. But if you're coming along, kind of like a child, if you're coming along, you have to be quiet. And you make friends, if you will. Your mind becomes your ally, whereas a lot of people, they view the mind as an adversary.
Well, the mind, the lower mind is your enemy, is your adversary. And that's really one of the main focuses of A New Now, is to learn how to work with your mind. But the mind is virtually impossible to quiet when it's not, until it really immerses itself in the word of the Bible, which is really an emanation of God. It's been called different names over millennia by different saints and masters: Logos, Shabbat, Nam, Bani. So that is really how you quiet the mind, through meditation, by contacting that. And we everything really is the word, or the sound. I call it the sound current. But what you need to be, as humans, we can be attuned to it, so we can meditate on that inner sound. And virtually everyone has heard echoes of a sound at some point. I mean, some people have gone to doctors because they hear ringing in their ears. Well, in those cases, they may be hearing echoes of the sound, which, when you really get in touch with it, is so enrapturing and pulling, and so you want to listen to. And that's really a more direct experience of God.
I know that right after my eldest sister's passing, I heard her voice of reassurance, just saying, "Hey, Richard, everything's okay. Everything's okay." And I remember, 3 months before her passing, we actually had on the phone, we had a conversation. And I asked her if she was afraid. And she said, yes and no. And I go, okay, you want to explain that, please? And she says, well, yes, I am, because I don't want to leave her husband's, my brother-in-law's name is Perry. I don't want to leave Perry behind with everything that he's got to deal with, you know, once I'm gone. But she said, but no, I'm not afraid. I'm ready. And I could hear in her voice that assurance, that she was not afraid. It wasn't just something that she said because of her beliefs per se. At least that was my observation. But that she was, you know, whenever it was going to happen, she was ready. I don't know if my father was the same way. I wasn't there either, but I did get to speak with him the night before his passing. And that was a wonderful thing. And I've had experiences of others who have passed, and I've had different reactions. My best friend of 53 years, every time I think about him, I laugh. Not because he was funny, but because we had so much fun together. And I know that, you know, he's freed up from whatever it was that he was dealing with back, when he passed. So it's like I get impressions from my father. I hear, heard, I don't so much anymore, my sister's voice. And so the other world, if you will, of the soul, maybe even through meditation, comes through. And I'm curious about that in terms of the journey of the soul. And I know that the journey, like your soul has been journeying, as far as you have been able to determine, over thousands of lifetimes, and I'm guessing thousands upon thousands of years.
Oh, right. I mean, particularly take you, for instance. I mean, you're like an advanced seeker. You've probably have had thousands of human lives. I was able to recover and know that I've had 4,137 human lives. But in terms of total lives, we've had millions of lives. I mean, I plants, insects, fish, birds, you name it. We're right now, we're at the top of creation. And that's why it's so critical to make best use of your human life. Absolutely.
I would say that you and I were doing As I have to quote myself, as I say in my song, I'm a good man doing the best I can, doing the best I, and I like to think that we're all just doing the best we can with what we have to work with. My parents, they raised me and my five other siblings the best they could with what they had. I don't blame them. Unlike we were trying to be taught back in the 80s and in a lot of the psychology back then, and well, it was your mother and your father's fault that you're the way you are. I'd blame them, you know. And it's like, no, I am who I am because of the good and the bad and the ugly. It's all of it, all rolled into one.
And also because of who you've been in prior lives, a lot of my inexplicable talents, aversions, interests I recovered were all related to specific experiences in particular past lives. And recovering those past lives, that had a far greater influence on me than my parents. It really explained who I am. I took these past impressions with me, and they were predominant this life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why was I designing homes, doing architecture when I was 7 years old? I mean, it wasn't because my parents said, you're going to become an architect. It's because I was completing a desire from three lives back when I was a commercial architect in Baltimore. And I had this huge, overpowering desire to design houses, but I never got a commission. So that desire came with me and it bloomed at this life at a very early age.
Well, I will say, just as architects in general are concerned, I marvel at the creativity in the mind. I mean, that's something too that is fascinating as to where some of these ideas come from. And you kind of already alluded to that. They may very well come. They might come from the ethers, but maybe more accurately, they come from our past lives of things
And also work we've done between lives. I mean, the reason I was able to traverse thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, is that I worked with a spiritual teacher before this lifetime to be able to traverse time readily.
Mm.
So it was a very natural thing for me. I mean, why do brilliant composers start composing or orchestral works, before they're 10 years old? I mean, take Mozart. He came in with that talent, that gift. He could have been developing it in prior lives and then before he entered this life.
Yeah, amazing.
It really explains everything.
It absolutely does. It's quite astounding, to be honest with you, some of the things that we've come up with. And yet at the same time, you know, I sometimes think that our technologies of today, there's something kind of strange, if you will, in my opinion, about where we are technologically. It's like this can't be just our own human evolution. There's got to be some outside influence. Now, again, taking the points that you and I have already made about past lives influences, I'm sitting here thinking, no, there's got to be some other outside influence on the material level. I think about, for example, interstellar travel. And we call them aliens. If they can travel interstellar, first of all, if they were malevolent, if they were evil, if they were here to take over, they would have already done so. They have the technologies. We don't stand a chance, you know? Mm-hmm. We'd be blowing spit wads through a straw and they're and they're taking over.
Well, I mean, the technological advances have been really amazing and beyond anyone's predictions. But the point is, we can be lost in that technology where, you know, you talk about space travel. What about inner space travel? Mm. I mean, advanced souls have written about it themselves, about the inner regions, which you can do a little bit of research and find out for yourself. And the beauty and magnificence far exceeds anything you can find in the physical universe.
Yeah.
I mean, why, as I kind of write in my new book, I mean, why hope to reincarnate in 300 to 500 years with the ability to travel in space when you can begin that adventure right now in your own body?
Yeah. It's interesting how we want to go out in outer space. We want to maybe colonize Mars and so forth. And yet the vastness, the infinite vastness of the inner space, our inner world, if you will.
Which dwarfs all the physical universes, really.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, just, it's just fascinating. It really is. My wife and I kind of joke about this sometimes. On the material level, we think about, you know, this whole aspect of alien influences in our civilizations over the millennia and so forth. And I keep thinking, and I kind of put this out there, I'm going, if you're really out there, you know, take me with you, please.
I used to do that as a kid. I would roam the hills in Marin County trying to contact aliens.
Yeah.
But yeah. Maybe an alien didn't come, but I did come in contact with a higher being.
Yeah.
Who, you know, was my meditation teacher.
Well, Michael, I am always fascinated by our conversations, and this one in particular, dealing with the mysteries of existence solved. They're not that hard to solve. Just all you have to do is open your eyes. And we've talked about several different aspects of existence, and it sounds to me like the real core of it all, in my observation, is that we, and I include myself in this because I'm not an active person doing this, is meditation seems to be a key to not only understanding one's own existence, but also at the same time, letting go of all of the outer distractions of the material world and finding out what's really important to self. And it's a small S, mind you.
Yeah, I mean, meditation is the key in contacting the sound current.
Yeah.
The word.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I thank you again for joining us here in the program. We're going to have you back again and again to talk more about this and to talk about the book when it's released in June. I'm really looking forward to that.
Thank you. I am too. I think people will find it mind-blowing, which is a good thing to have your mind blown and opened up.
Yeah, I put it in the context of my knowledge base that is constructed of straw huts. Let's just burn them down, okay? I don't mind. All right? Just burn them all down and start over. Because the core for me is the saying that I was given when I was 21 was, it is better to begin in doubt and end in certainty than to begin in certainty and end in doubt. And it seems to me like when we go into that that still small place, a quiet, peaceful place, and listen to our intuition or still small voice, we're going to have certainty. It's not necessarily something we have to share with the rest of the world. You can if you want, but it's really for you, not for anybody else. It's one of those things where, Michael, God is not telling me to tell you anything. Okay.
Yeah. If you are lucky to receive a spiritual treasure, keep it to yourself rather than dispel it. That increases your ability to have further grace.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And to quote a biblical passage, you know, don't cast pearls before swine.
Exactly. Yeah. That's Michael, the whole point of that. Always a delight, Richard.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. And I thank you folks for listening to and watching. Tell me your story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until our next broadcast, podcast, videocast, love to all. Jeanette, I'm still listening. Dad, continue to be happy because I am. Smokey, I'll see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.